In the night.
Anyasmat.
For many others. Beyond Lord Brahma. Api. Even. Cha. Also. Ayudahai. By any weapon used within this material world. Nor. Bumau. On the ground. Not. Ambare. In the sky. Mrityuhu.
Death.
Not. Narahai. By any men. Nor. Mrigahai. By any animal. Api. Also. So translation. Grant me that I not die within any residence or outside any residence during the daytime or at night, nor on the ground or in the sky. Grant me that my death not be brought by any being other than those created by you, nor by any weapon, nor by any human being or animal. So, let me repeat. Grant me that I not die within any residence or outside any residence during the daytime or at night, nor on the ground or in the sky. Grant me that my death not be brought by any being other than those created by you, nor by any weapon, nor by any human being or animal. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hiranyakashipu was very much afraid of Vishnu's becoming an animal to kill him because his brother had been killed by Vishnu when the Lord took the shape of a boar. He was therefore very careful to guard against all kinds of animals. But even without taking the shape of an animal, Vishnu could kill him by hurling his Sudarshan Chakra, which can go anywhere without the Lord's physical presence. Therefore, Hiranyakashipu was careful to guard against all kinds of weapons. He guarded against all kinds of time, space, and countries because he was afraid of being killed by someone else in another land. There are many other planets, higher and lower, and therefore he prayed for the benediction of not being killed by any resident of any of these planets. There are three original deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshvara. Hiranyakashipu knew that Brahma would not kill him, but he also wanted not to be killed by Lord Vishnu or Lord Shiva. Consequently, he prayed for such a benediction. Thus, Hiranyakashipu thought himself securely protected from any kind of death caused by any living being entity within this universe. He also carefully guarded against natural death, which might take place within his house or outside of the house. So, Nantarvahir Divanaktam Anyasmarapichayudahai Nabumav Nambare Brichur Nanarayar Namrigar Api. So, Omagana Tivaranda Shah Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tosmai Shigurvena Maha. So, here, Hiranyakashipu, being an expert lawyer, just like if you read any of these contracts that you get from time to time, you'll see they try to cover all eventualities so they don't have to pay you. I mean, especially if it's with an insurance company or something like that. So Hiranyakashipu is being an expert lawyer and thinking he's taking care of all the possibilities, you know, man or beast, or created by Lord Brahma, or not created by Lord Brahma, weapons, or inside, or outside. He thinks, I have it made. So this is a standard with atheistic people, that they make some materialistic adjustment or plan in order to attain their goals, in order to circumvent the plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in order to avoid death. This is a standard thing, and there's many stories about this in the Vedic literatures. One story that comes to mind is the I'm going to tell several stories. It's the story of Shambarasura. Shambarasura was a demon, as you know, because that's, his last name was Asura. His first name was Shambara. You can tell, it's pretty easy. So Shambarasura was a demon, and he also didn't follow the four regulated principles, also nice things like that. But he heard the prediction that he would be killed by Prajuna, who was the son of Krishna and Rukmini. So he thought, well, I'm going to make a plan so I'm not killed by Prajuna. And so what he did is he kidnapped Prajuna right after Prajuna was born. This is a story from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then he attempted to kill Prajuna by throwing him into the ocean. And so he threw Prajuna in the ocean, and guess what? A big fish ate Prajuna. But because Prajuna was the son of Krishna and Rukmini, he was not digested by the fish. Something like the story of Noah, not Noah, who was that, who was swallowed by the whale?
Jonah.
Swallowed by the whale. So somehow or other, he wasn't digested by the fish. Later on, a fisherman caught the fish, big fish actually, and gave the fish to the kitchen, Shambhara's kitchen. This story is in the Krishna book. And they cut open this fish, and inside the fish, they discovered a baby. And that was Prajuna. And so one of the assistants there in the kitchen, her name was Mayavati, she thought, how cute this baby is. And then she realized that the baby was her husband. That's interesting, too. I mean, how can you realize a baby is your husband? So she realized the baby was her husband because previously she was Hrati, who was the wife of the demigod Cupid. And the demigod Cupid made a really big mistake. His mistake was that he disturbed Lord Shiva. He tried to agitate. Like the demigods sometimes, or Indra, he sends down different apsaras or other associates to agitate sages. So Lord Shiva, of course, is the best of all the sages. So and Lord Shiva got very angry, and he burnt Cupid to ashes with his glance. So he was able to conquer lust, but then a little bit of anger came out at that point. So Cupid became Ananga. Ananga means basically without any limbs or invisible. And that's why he's invisible now. And you can't see him coming. When he comes, you're just like, what is it? When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie. That's amore, as the Italian song goes. So anyway, so he actually took birth as Krishna's son. And Mayavati, who was previously Rati, Cupid's wife, understood that it was her husband. So she took care of him, and he grew very rapidly, it's described, very, very rapidly, within a few days, basically. He achieved maturity. Pretty good. That's also the case. Actually, it's also the case with Rakshasas. That when they're right after Rakshasa is born, they actually become full grown. That was the case with Ghatotkacha, who is Bhima's son. He just became full grown right after he was born. So anyway, so he became full born, and you know, for one day, Mayavati was treating him like her little baby. The next day, she was making eyes at him. And he was saying, this is a little confusing. You know, one day you're my mother, and the other next day you want to, you know, have a relationship with me? You know, what's happening? And of course, this is not like Sigmund Freud's modern-day Oedipus complex, as many of you may have studied in the university, because she understood it was actually her husband. She was just like growing her husband up as quickly as possible. Anyway, and then she revealed to him, you know, actually, I'm your wife, you're Cupid, and I have a lot of mystic powers. I can help you defeat the Shambhara, Shambhara-sura. So that's what she did. She actually helped Prajuna defeat Shambhara-sura. Shambhara-sura was killed by Prajuna. And then she used her mystic powers and they both flew back and they came into the palace in Dwarka. And because Prajuna was the firstborn son of Krishna. So another point is, even you may be God, but sometimes you have to undergo certain reverses. Imagine having your son, your firstborn son, kidnapped, and you're God. Of course, Krishna understood what had happened. And therefore, Shambhara-sura was killed. It was predicted. He tried to make an arrangement so he wouldn't be killed. But all of his arrangements actually led to his being killed, which is interesting. That sometimes someone tries to make an arrangement to avoid death, but that very arrangement is the thing that causes his death. Because you can't surmount the insurmountable energy or plans of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Another instance, of course, is Kamsa. Kamsa is a similar type of story. You know, Kamsa was taking his sister, Devaki, and her husband, Vasudeva, from their marriage. Actually, that's the standard in many aspects of Indian culture, that you have the brother-in-law, or the brother of the brother-in-law, of course, is the husband, and the brother of the bride, drive the chariot to take them to their new home. So Kamsa was doing that, and then he heard a voice from the air. And that voice said, you know, foolish Kamsa, don't you understand? The eighth son of Devaki and Vasudeva is going to kill you. So he thought, you know, let me make some arrangements so there's not going to be an eighth son. What was the arrangement? He put them in prison. Originally, he thought the best arrangement would be to kill Devaki. But he was dissuaded from doing that. You know, he had a little bit of piety. And Vasudeva, who was known as always telling the truth, promised, I'm going to deliver each and every kid to you. So he allowed them to remain in prison. And basically, just to make sure that the eighth son didn't kill him, he killed every kid. And the reason he killed every kid is because he didn't know, according to Narada Muni's advice and instructions, which one was number eight. Because he was thinking, this is what Narada Muni told him, that the demigods, they could be counting in a strange way. So you got to really, you know, take care of yourself. You know, they should be counting 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, or they could be counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 8, 7, 6, 5. So he said, you know, be careful, these demigods are really tricky. So Kamsa thought, you know, kill all of them. But, you know, Krishna arranged that, of course, he couldn't be killed. But he arranged that he was transferred by Vasudeva, to Braj and kept safe there. And later on, he entered into Mathura. And Kamsa also had so many material arrangements to avoid being killed by Krishna. So many. He had this Chanura and Mushtika. You know who they are? They're wrestlers. And he thought, well, they could certainly kill Krishna and Balaram. And then he had Kuvalyapida. Does anybody know who Kuvalyapida is? The elephant. Who was like a killer elephant. And Krishna just like jumped on his back and killed him. And, you know, eventually Krishna did end up killing Kamsa. And actually, had Kamsa not made the arrangement to try to avoid his death, he probably could have avoided it. you know, had he made friends with Vasudeva Devaki and taken care of his little nephew nicely, Krishna. So it's really interesting how so many materialistic plans are made. Another story about that, materialistic plans, is Duryodhana. Before the battle of Kurukshetra, there was this arrangement with Krishna as to who would get Krishna and who would get Krishna's army. And Krishna said, whoever gets me, I'm not fighting. You know, I'm just going to just be passive, peace and love. And so whoever gets my army, it's the Narayan army. The Narayan army cannot get defeated. I mean, these are the army of Narayan. That's pretty good. So that's a materialistic calculation. So what happened was with Duryodhana and Arjuna, they went to Krishna, and Krishna said, whoever I see first, because Krishna was taking a nap, whoever I see first will get their choice of either me or my army. So Duryodhana, being very puffed up, sat by Krishna's head, and Arjuna, because he was understood, he was a servant of Krishna, he loved Krishna, he sat by Krishna's feet, and Krishna naturally looked at his feet first before he looked in front of his head. And when he looked at his feet, he said, oh, Arjuna, you got a choice. And Arjuna said, basically, I want you, Krishna. See, that's the opposite of material adjustments. Material adjustments means we take some material means to improve our life or to achieve immortality or to defeat death or something like that. And Krishna consciousness means we just take shelter of Krishna. Of course, we should go to the doctor, on the other hand. It's not that we say, we just chant Hare Krishna, break your arm. How do you chant Hare Krishna to it? You know, but understanding that's coming from Krishna. But if Krishna has some plans, don't think that you're going to be successful by avoiding. Even when it's the order of the spiritual master, for example, like Prabhupada gives you an order, and you'll think, you know, I'll be more successful if I go somewhere else. I mean, like, I'll give you an example of that. Before I get back to the Duryodhana story, there was two devotees, actually one devotee, who was with Prabhupada. It was the first sannyasi that Prabhupada ever gave in ISKCON. So Prabhupada gave this devotee sannyasi. And then he said, I want you to stop in London and help with the preaching there. On the way, he was in India with Prabhupada. And instead, he had a better idea. He thought, well, you know, I have a better idea than Prabhupada, so he went to America instead. And he thought, well, to preach Krishna consciousness, this is not exactly Krishna West. This is Krishna whatever. He put on monk's clothes and anyway, started breaking the principles too. But that's another story. So Prabhupada rejected him at that particular point. Later on, Prabhupada accepted him back because he thought he knew better. So anyway, so getting back to the story of Duryodhana, Duryodhana was in ecstasy when Arjuna picked Krishna instead of Krishna's army. He was thinking, fantastic, you know, Krishna's not going to fight, you know, what good is he? But he didn't understand that having Krishna on your side, even if Krishna didn't fight, and of course Krishna did fight once or twice to defend Arjuna against Grandfather Bhishma. So he didn't understand that having Krishna on your side giving you advice is a hell of a lot better than having a big army. And Krishna not only giving advice, but being tricking Duryodhana out of getting invulnerability and making sure Duryodhana wore a gumsha around the midriff of his body so that when his mother, Gandhari, looked at him, the middle portion of the body would be vulnerable instead of invulnerable. So Krishna's extremely tricky like that. Don't think you can out-trick Krishna. And as a result, Duryodhana lost the battle of Kurukshetra. Had he had Krishna on his side, I mean, I don't know what would have happened. Krishna probably would have sabotaged him anyway. there were actually people on Duryodhana's side who sabotaged them. That's another story. So anyway, so that's another example of material arrangements trying to prevent the ultimate, trying to counteract Krishna's plan. And even in Krishna's pastimes, I was thinking about this, is actually quite interesting, that in Vrindavan pastimes, you have examples of this. Of course, it's all pastime. But how the gopis, the elderly gopis, they try to prevent Krishna from stealing the butter. And how do they try to prevent Krishna from... They had made material plans. I'm not saying material because it's also yogamaya, but external plans. You know, one is they put it in a dark room, the butter. So Krishna, you know, it would be dark, so you couldn't find the butter. So, but then Krishna's effulgence lit up everything. And Krishna was able to steal the butter. And then other times they actually put the butter right high from the ceiling. And then Krishna had a plan, like he stood, or he got up on his friend's shoulders like that, and they were able to steal the butter. And even when they were trying to prevent Krishna from doing naughty things, you know, sometimes they made the butter completely out of reach of Krishna. Krishna would just like go and pinch their babies and pass urine on the floor. Well, in other words, they were trying to avoid Krishna's harassment through external adjustment. And Krishna got his own way anyway. And then even in the pastimes of when Krishna's girlfriends, the gopis, they were called by Krishna's flute. The gopis, some of the gopis' husbands tried to prevent them from going. And so then they went anyway in their spiritual bodies to join the Supreme Personality of God. So anyway, so these are different examples, just like Hiranyakashipu here is just trying to really adjust things so that, you know, he can get away with murder, basically, without being killed by Krishna. These are different examples of how people did these things in Krishna's pastimes, and none of them were successful. So apart from Krishna's pastimes, we have people doing this or attempting to do this through science. You know, in other words, conquer death. We were mentioning the other day that there's a lot of money being put into this whole scenario. The investigations are scientific investigations, how to conquer death. And every day you read something about how scientists are making advancements in conquering death. And you don't see it, that people are not living longer. It's interesting that even statistically, people used to die more of these, like diseases, you know, like the infectious diseases. Now people are dying from lifestyle diseases. And then the scientists come up with different ways, like for example this GMO food. It's a popular topic, you know, genetically modified food. So they thought, oh, this is going to help people be healthier, feed more people, and then it creates more diseases, more cancer. So, of course, in the Bhagavatam it says, you know, that when you try to solve material problems with material arrangements, you make the problem worse. Just like any material arrangement. I mean, let's say we have our technology, I mean the cars, for example. So in order to have cars, you have to have a job to pay for the cars. So you need the car to drive to work. And then you need your work to pay for the car. So you actually have less time in the day for doing things that are fun. And your idea of fun is craziness. I mean, the idea, you know, in the old days, people would have fun, you know, just plowing the fields, growing vegetables. That's a lot of fun. And they'd have exercise and everything like that. And nowadays, their idea of fun is you pay a lot of money, you go to an amusement park and get yourself squeezed in a centrifuge. Or going on a roller coaster where you're screaming. I remember when I was young going in a roller coaster. It's the last time I did it in this lifetime. And just like, you know, just going up, down, and then to the side, and Dramamine, you know, taking Dramamine like so you don't vomit. And I was just praying to Krishna, let it be over. Is it material world or going to Disneyland? One time I went to Disneyland, Disney World, sorry, with Jayapataka Maharaj. You know, so I'd have devotee association. So we had the excuse, we were looking for displays in Mayapur. You can always justify any damn thing. So we went to Disney World and thought, boy, I'm going to have a lot of fun with Jai Pataka Maharaj today. And basically it was mostly standing on lines. And they're expert in Disney World in hiding the lines, you know, you stand on the line. And you can't see how long it is. You can go to a short line, but it actually curves around here, curves around there. And that's the material world. You know, you think it's, wow, I'm going to do this. But then it's just like boring torture in the meantime. Or like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, it's like happiness in the material happiness, and happiness in the mode of passion is like nectar in the beginning, like poison at the end. It's like that. So anyway, so material adjustments, and we find people in this material world who are trying to make material adjustments. Of course, there's the example I always give of Howard Hughes, who posited himself in a very high building with filtered air so that germs wouldn't reach him and he would live longer, and he died. Some disease, you know, old age or something like that. So basically, we should just take shelter of Krishna's names, and when these material things happen, use them as opportunities. Just like someone wrote me yesterday a letter saying, he said, you know, oh, life is so miserable. This has happened, this has happened. And he's young, he's in good health. I'm just thinking, life is so miserable. Probably because his parents are putting pressure on him, you know, some Indian family, to do something he doesn't want to do. And I basically said, you've got to elevate your consciousness higher and see things in the right perspective. And you see things in the right perspective and elevate your consciousness, yeah, those same things will exist. They were causing you pain before. But your consciousness will be so high that you understand the right priorities. You'll be happy chanting Krishna's holy names. So that's the whole point. That's the way to mitigate the miseries. And in fact, that's what the Vedic literatures teach us. The mitigating process is bhakti yoga. To mitigate means lessen, or to get rid of the misery, material miseries. And we can conquer death. What is the method for conquering death? By realizing who we are, eternal servants of Krishna. And then death to us is like a kitten and the cat. You understand? That's the example Prabhupada gives. That the cat picks up the kitten with its mouth. And death to someone who's making material adjustments is like the cat picking up the rat. And the interesting thing is when cats pick up rats, they play with them too, before they kill them, isn't it? That's how miserable death is. So, anyway, on that happy note, so any questions or comments about anything we said about material adjustments to avoid death and all these, there's so many different stories we can pull from the Vedic literatures about material arrangements or adjustments that people take to avoid death or problems. So, any questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues? No? Apurva, you always have something to say.
Well, just in that story you told about Pradyumna,
yeah.
Was his wife in a previous birth, was she already married to someone?
In a previous? She was married to Cupid.
Yeah. But I mean, in that...
So in that birth?
Yeah.
You mean the fisherman or something like that? So something like that, yeah.
She was in the kitchen.
She was in the kitchen. I don't know if she was married to the fisherman. But she was a servant. Somehow or other she had been posited as a servant of Shambhara.
And how was it that Pradyumna grew so fast?
Some of the Puranas say, I'm not saying that this is bona fide, because I don't know if it's a bona fide edition of the Puranas. Some of the Puranas say that she used her mystic power to make him grow fast. But the Bhagavatam doesn't indicate that. The Bhagavatam just says he grew fast. He grew fast. I'd have to read some of the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, maybe comments more on it, of how she grew fast.
Krishna's other children didn't grow that fast.
What?
Krishna's other children didn't grow that fast.
No, they didn't grow that fast. So I'm sure Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says something about it, but I don't remember that particular commentary. But he did grow fast. That's all we know. Really fast. You know, he went through teenage years really quickly like that. And then she had her husband back. Pradyumna. And that's the first son of Krishna. So You want your children to grow faster? Actually, most parents don't want their children to grow faster because they're so nice when they're young. And then when they get old, they don't obey anymore. It's like they're cute. Almost every child, when they're young, they're cute. But when they get older, it's no longer cute. So, any questions? Other questions or comments about these points? About material adjustments, material arrangements? Obviously, we do have to do certain things. Like I mentioned before, we do have to go to the doctor and do certain things like that. But not overboard. Not that we lose our Krishna consciousness. Not that we spend our whole lives just going to different Ayurvedic doctors. Not that we spend our whole lives getting the jewels that the astrologer prescribes to counteract all the inauspicious signs. You know, you see sometimes devotees wearing jewels on all the fingers of their hand. And actually Prabhupada said, chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna with the tip of his toe could destroy millions of Rahus. So the chanting of the holy name makes everything auspicious. We don't need to employ so many even Vedic materialistic means. You know, Navaratna, you know, the different jewels and everything like that. You know, I've been advised sometimes, you know, Maharaj, you should have to get a sapphire and sapphire ring, of course, and that'll make your life auspicious. But you know, Hare Krishna. You know, from time to time we may take a little medicine. Okay. But not really go overboard with it. And Prabhupada exhibited that same consciousness. He didn't go overboard with the medicine. He didn't take shelter of the doctors. You know, he just wanted to see what Krishna wanted. Mm. So, any other questions or comments? Yeah, Gopi.
I'm curious about, because I think it was, I can't remember, it was either yesterday or the day before, we were talking about not having a face, and so I'm wondering, you mentioned something about the offenses and avoiding those and the association that we take, and so I'm curious, how do we identify the offenses, because it's not always so obvious that we're, you know, how do we learn or understand what offenses we're committing so that we can avoid them?
Well, there's offenses with the body, mind, words. And the worst offense is against the Vaishnavas, but then we have the 10 offenses too. That's why we study the 10 offenses too. And then we have offenses against the Dham, the residents of the Dham, offenses against the Dham, you know, offenses against books.
Yeah, but knowing is one thing, identifying is another.
It requires a lot of alertness. You have to be very alert, very careful. Mananvi Savadan, just like this word Savadan, means caution. And they have that on Indian roads, you know, Sabadan, caution. And American roads too, but in Indian roads it doesn't mean anything.
But it's
yeah. Yeah, the guru and, yeah. And to approach Vaishnavas who can, who would offend it. That's why we should offer obeisances. Like you find these great devotees, like Sanatana Goswami, who offer like 1,000 obeisances to Vaishnavas every day. Jai, Shishi Radhagalokananda, Radhagalokananda Ki Jai. Obeisances. Oh.